Hello and welcome to Scriptmate, the podcast for writers who dream of seeing their words spoken by paid actors on some sort of screen. I'm your host, Tim Schilberger, writer and founder of Write LA, a writing community and writing education and resources website. Joining me is the highly skilled and regularly opinionated Tony Giambiso. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tim. It's going great.
You like that one?
Yeah.
If this is your first podcast, I'm coming up with new adjectives to describe Tony's opinions. Mm-hmm. In this episode, Tony and I are going to talk about rejection and disillusionment. So it's going to be a laugh riot. Why it sucks, why it's unavoidable, and hopefully we'll give you some ideas and thoughts to help you get back on that writing horse and hold on to that dream, cling to that dream that we all cling to, despite some evidence to the contrary. We'll also answer some questions from you, pick some movie moments that mean something, and I'll share some random Aussie trivia. But first, let's get into rejection.
All right, start us off.
I don't want to. I reject that. Well, rejection comes in many forms. I believe that there is, I wrote a little list. There is rejection in feedback where someone says, nah, mate. Rejection in competitions, especially when you don't pay for feedback, where you just get a nah, mate email. And then you're like, oh, why? And I thought this was pretty good.
That's
and
our other podcast, Nah, Mate.
Nah, mate. Nah, mate. Yeah, because that I know you've had that. We all get that feeling when you enter a competition. You're like, yeah. And then you get that email like, oh, there were so many entries and we really appreciate your entry. And you're like, oh.
They say congratulations on being such, on finishing a script. And you're like, oh, okay.
And it's like, but I thought this one was good.
Yeah.
Then there's industry rejection, which is we're just heading in a different direction. And then there's the general media worries and concerns, which is the disillusionment aspect of it, where there seems to be a lot of press, especially at the moment and probably since the writer's strike or during the writer's strike and since, there's a lot of articles about Hollywood is in the toilet and it's a disaster and a train wreck and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that at times we all are like, well, what are we doing here? What does it look like? And again, I know from people I'm talking to, pretty much all the meetings around town right now are a whole bunch of creatives and executives looking at one another saying the same thing. Like, what's going on? What's our future? This is sad. So we are here to provide solace.
Okay. That's what we're doing?
Yeah.
Rethink some
well,
of that.
Well, no, I mean, what else would we be doing? I mean, we're going to be half an hour and be like, yeah, give up.
Yeah.
This is the give up podcast. This is our last podcast.
Give up, mate. Yeah. I think, so you touched on a couple of things, but I want to just, when I think about just rejection in general, I like to...
Not your personal life.
Yeah. Okay. I like to reframe rejection as a artist, screenwriter, whatever.
Okay.
Whatever you are. I did this once. I think it was like 10 years ago. I had like a rejection party where everyone had to bring a printout of something where they got rejected, whether it was from a date, a thing. And the point was more about the industry and that our job is to be rejected. Like a successful... I mean, if we're taking away the top 0.01% of actors and writers, even a successful actor is rejected 95% of the time, you know, like that it is part of it. So if we try to run from it, if we try to reject it, then it's going to screw up our motivation. It's going to screw up our soul. It's going to screw up everything about our confidence, as opposed to something where it's more of a numbers game. You're going to get rejected. You're going to get rejected in many ways. You're going to get rejected from competitions, from producers, from managers. And you're also, you know, we met in a writer's group, or we met before that, but we were in a writer's group together a long time ago. And every month you write 30 pages. You hear your stuff read aloud, like you just said, a live read. And then
that was in a previous podcast.
Yes.
I didn't say in this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've mentioned it before.
Yes.
So if you're listening to this all in a row, then you know. but the every month you basically just, you'd get respectfully torn apart by a group of really talented writers and actors.
Yeah.
And that is a form of a series of rejection. They're rejecting this line. They're rejecting this idea. They're rejecting this character. And you just have to... The point is that you show up the next month with your next pages and you keep working through it and you say, oh, this is actually good. This is teaching me something, as opposed to my goal is to go up every month and have everyone just applaud me, mm-hmm. well, then you're probably just not going to write anymore.
Right. Well, you certainly, that is an excellent point, is why it does speak to why we're doing what we do, what the purpose is, what the outcome is, what the expectations are and the hopes. And hope is obviously a huge engine to this. I mean, without hope, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast, let's be honest. So, Mum, thanks for listening. but you really need that hope in order to put pen on page or fingers on keyboard. So how do you sort of combine or make that work with the constant rejection is really the ongoing challenge, because like you said, you made a good point, you'll be rejected all the time. I think you want to get to the point, and even the top writers who earn a lot of money are still never, I don't think I've ever seen a writer have a sustained career where they're just constantly turning away work and being like, I wrote this idea on the back of a napkin. Great, let's go into production.
Yeah.
And you know, can you write this for me? Can you write this for us? Can you do this? And you're constantly able to combine that. Well, I'm writing what I want to write, but I'm also writing other things that pay money, and it's just the work's just flowing in and it's constant and this life is great. There are very few, if any, who have had that happen for any extended period of time. So the whole nature of this is filled with rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with what you said. I think it's like how you choose to deal with it. And that's why I broke it up into different sections, because mm-hmm. I think there are different forms of rejection and I think you can deal with them maybe slightly differently. Mm-hmm. The larger ones we can deal with, they're easy, because if you get to a studio and they read your script and they say no, or if you get to a studio, as has been happening recently, where a script or a production could be in with them for years, and then they say, you know what, it's better as a tax write-off. Like, imagine the people who did that Wile E. Coyote mm-hmm. movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's made, it's finished. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no one's ever going to see this. Or even the dude who just did the documentary on Prince
mm-hmm.
who spent 6 years doing a nine-hour documentary.
It's gone.
As some sort of negotiating tool so that Netflix could get better access to something. It's just astonishing. So, I mean, that guy, the first thought is, well, at least he got paid.
Yeah.
Which is nice. And anybody who gets rejected on something that they have not been paid for knows what that feels like, where it's like, well, I didn't even get paid and it's dead. So this sucks. But money only goes so far in terms of the rejection. So yeah. But then so there's the big rejection where the big studios are going to reject you, or they're going to shut things down, or things are going to go. And I think if you treat getting a movie actually onto a screen as a reward unto itself, that's great. I think every milestone should be celebrated. Every positive should be celebrated. We have a tendency as human beings to really embrace the rejection and discount the good news and the positives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Maybe writers are more susceptible to that than others, but we certainly do that. And I would encourage you not to do that. But then it's also, it speaks to the why am I doing this in the first place? And if I'm doing this to avoid rejection and to be universally loved or beloved, I would say that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard thing to sustain. And likewise, in a minute, we're going to talk about what you do when you are rejected. Like, what are some things you do to sort of dust yourself off and get back onto the horse? So,
And before we get to that, I want to say that like writing is, and we can talk about this more in another podcast, but writing is process. And I so often see it very romanticized, where someone will often say, and I understand that people have different privileges. They may have families, they may have jobs where they can't write. So it's not about the literal amount of hours that you're writing. But if you're trying to write professionally, if you're trying to get paid to do it, then you have to treat it like a job, and you have to treat it with intention. And there's a process. And if you're only writing when you're inspired, or you're only writing when you have the perfect idea, or you're in like some sort of flow state, well, then likely you're going to be that person that says, yeah, no, I got to get to that. I got to get to that. You talk about the script every day, but you don't actually sit down and work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a process. And it's this process of, it might be really fun at first, and then you start doing your outline, and now you're kind of miserable again. And then you hit a little flow and you're happy. And you just got to go through it. It's like, if you're an athlete, it's like, or you're trying to get into shape, right? You say, I'm going to I'm not going to wait till I'm in shape to go to the gym because it doesn't work. You have to show up, and you have to show up on days that you don't feel it. And then you're going to, the days that you do feel it, even better. And if you're just treating it like a process and you're going through it and you're doing that, it's less about, oh, I had this spark of an idea and then I got rejected and it's some rejection of me. It's more like, I'm just going to continue going through this process. I'm going to continue working this thing, and maybe I'm just not, the script just needs to be continue down that road. You know, I've had scripts that I've written in 2 months that have, you know, moved forward, and I have scripts that have taken me 10 years that have both been rejected and moved forward. I've also written scripts in 2 months that are dead, you know, but the idea is that you got to just keep the process. And so this idea, you know, I have a friend who's an actor, and he says, if you're an actor, act. If you're a director, direct. Right. If you're a writer, write and pod.
Yes.
You just have to show up. And so this idea of rejection is like, well, the rejection's going to come, but I'm just going to keep writing. I'm going to keep doing my thing. I'm going to keep learning and growing and doing all the things. I'm not just going to, you know, put on horse blinders and stay in my lane. I'm going to try to continue getting better. But I'm just going to keep showing up, and rejection will come and go. And eventually you will find, like you said, those moments that give you some sort of validation.
So you're saying treat rejection as part of the process.
It is literally part of the process. And if you don't, then what happens is you lose your motivation. You know, if you need to like take a minute and give yourself a week, that's okay.
That's what I was about to say. You may want to avoid the suppression. Yeah. Of the negative feelings.
Yeah.
You don't want to shove it down being like, okay, I feel really sad, but I'm going to put that down and keep
writing. But it's the same thing with the gym analogy. If you're in pain and your back hurts, well, then don't go and do squats. You know, get a massage, do some yoga, do whatever it is, relax. Maybe you just need to relax. Don't have to work out for 3 hours a day for 7 days a week, but you do have to show up in the appropriate amount of time. And so writing is very difficult emotionally, intellectually, all of those things, but you do just have to keep showing up at whatever that means for you. If you're 23 years old and you have the privilege of time and you maybe have some money and saved, well, then you should be treating it like a job. You should be waking up every day. Other people might be able to devote an hour a day or 5 hours a week, whatever it is. Approach those with the intention of, oh, I don't have to do something brilliant here. I just have to show up. I have to do my thing. I have to do it consistently. Sometimes I'll get rejected. Sometimes I'll have better days. And then, you know, nothing is guaranteed in this industry. So, I mean, I hope for everyone that it leads to financial success and you can support yourself and your family off of it. But you're most likely going to get there through the process. But the stories we all hear generally are, oh, this person wasn't even a writer and they just wrote down a thing. And then it's like, okay, well, maybe, discovered, you know, like that way, the way that an actor could just, you know, I don't have to take acting classes. I'll just be attractive and go to the store and someone will see me. And you're like, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's probably better off if you just like what did the things that an actor do, which is act.
And often you get discovered, but you don't have a career.
Yeah.
Without that background of actual information.
Well, Sean said that about the script, right? You have a great script. And then what else do you have?
Yes. You know? That's right. To build a career.
You're not putting it all in one egg in one basket.
So rejection is part of the process. But then, so what do we do when we're directly rejected? Like, how do we process that information and the different forms that it comes in? I think the hardest one for me to process in some ways, when I've done well in a competition, like I've made it to the quarterfinals and I haven't made the semifinals, and you don't get any reason why, you just get a, nah, like I said, nah, mate.
Yeah.
And you're like, but why? And then it's like, then you start thinking, oh, the reader was probably drunk, or they don't like rom-coms, or they're biased against me. Like they didn't see my genius. They're idiots. And that doesn't lead anywhere. You just end up frustrated. Mm-hmm. But it's entirely natural and almost impossible to avoid. Mm-hmm. So how do you kind of find that middle ground? And I think the answer to that is you just got to feel the feels for a little while and be like, okay, yeah, that totally sucks. It burns. I remember I went once to the only time I've seen Bruce Springsteen, and I went with my then wife, and we went on and just before we left to go to the concert, I found out I didn't make the semifinals of Nichols. I'd made the quarterfinals, but I hadn't made the semifinals or something like that. One of those, like I was really close and I hadn't made the final step. And I remember that entire concert being like, this
sucks.
Mm-hmm. Everything sucks. And I'm watching Bruce Springsteen.
You're like, I don't want to dance in the dark.
Yeah, you dance in the dark. I just Thunder Road all the way up the bloody
No, that happened to me. I had a friend visiting from London. It was a 2-week trip. It was going to be the greatest. I was literally in the airport waiting to pick him up from the, you know, Tom Bradley terminal at LAX. And I got a message from someone who was reading a script of mine. It wasn't a contest, but he basically said, I couldn't get through your script. Hated it so much.
Oh, nice.
We'll talk if you want. And I was like, what?
What's there to talk
this
about?
This is so mean. Yeah. No, thanks. And so, you know, I still had a good time with my friend, but it was like, it definitely, I was in my head for that night.
That's awful.
Well, I guess side advice, don't send someone that text.
No.
It's okay to be honest, but, you know, understand that that text is going to ruin their night.
No, I've learned because I do consulting and I work with clients, and I used to be known as the Simon Cowell of feedback because I meant well, but I was a little bit blunt.
Yeah.
And so, but I always meant well. It wasn't like, you know, I'm not attacking you as a person. I'm just listening to the pages and it's like, well, have you, do you hear this problem or you see this problem? So now I've sort of softened because, you know, how you get that rejection can certainly impact how you receive it.
Mm-hmm.
But I, so I think the step is to sort of acknowledge the rejection, feel the pain, but then do your best to learn from it. If there are notes attached to it, don't just screw them up and throw them in the trash and be like, well, that person doesn't know what they're talking about.
Write them down. If someone's giving you notes, take notes
always.
And then think about them, because you might get notes from, you might write that person off, and maybe that person is write offable. But if they have that one important note that three other people give you, then you might say, okay, I think there's some consistency here.
So, but here's a question for you.
Yeah.
At what point does the rejection reach the point where you abandon the project?
So this is, so this is a big question, and that almost feels like a whole topic, but we can touch on it.
It can be, what's the topic? Like when to abandon your script, to stop.
I'd say so.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Because I've had scripts that I abandoned and then found 4 or 5 years later because either I, you know, woke up in the middle of the night and had an idea, or somebody needed it and I thought, oh, I have an opportunity. I have a script that's already written. Maybe I can come to it with some fresh eyes or maybe they'll like it. Maybe the other people just didn't and it got in my head. And then I abandoned. So it's like, oh, I always liked that project, but I could never figure it out versus what happened to me recently, which was I realized that I didn't even like the script and there was something that I did like in it, but I could never get it to the point that I liked it and nobody else liked it. So that was reflective of my own feelings about it. And then I thought, well, why am I spending so much time on this? It's like that sunk cost. And so understanding that sometimes you can just put something aside, return to it later, or take pieces of it for other things later.
But I suppose the trick is, how do you, because sometimes you can abandon something too quickly too.
Mm, totally.
So you've got to kind of find that rejection balance where it's like, okay, I got rejected. Because I would write a draft, I would send it off. If someone said no, I'd be like, well, screw you. And that was a dumb idea anyway. I'm going to move on to the next one.
Yep.
And whereas I probably should have looked at it and been like, well, is there something there? Is it still speaking to me? Or am I just reacting to the rejection? And rather than dealing with the rejection, it's like, okay, you didn't like this draft. How do I make this better? Because I still believe in this project. Mm-hmm. Instead of like, well, I'm just going to run away and move on to another idea.
And there's also taste, right? I wouldn't recommend certain movies to my mother because I know she's not going to like them. It doesn't mean that the movie is bad. And yet we give notes, you know, we don't consider someone's taste. Now, that doesn't mean that if someone says something, you can just write it off. Like I said, take the notes, consider what they're saying, see how it matches up with what other people say. But, you know, in my own experience, I had a day that I sent a script to a writer that we know, who is a successful writer, and I value his feedback. And I also sent it to my manager at the time, who's also a producer that was attached to another project of mine. And in the morning, that writer, which I'll tell you after, you probably already know, called me and was like, it's not working. Like, it's not good. And he told me all the reasons why it wasn't working. And he wasn't wrong, but he just didn't like it. And I thought, oh no, I've already sent this script and I was pretty new with this company. And then later in the day, I got a call from that manager and he said, yeah, we really like it. Like, we want to move forward with it. Now, they wanted to move forward with it and rewrite the entire script. So that writer wasn't wrong.
Right.
But there was still something worth salvaging within it, or there was so both of them are right, but just one saw potential for the project where the other didn't. But they were both agreeing with what wasn't working.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So rejection is something you're going to have to deal with, something that you're going to have to find your own peace with. Our recommendation is you let it sink in for a moment, but then you use it. Then you're like, okay, well, this is part of my process. This is how scripts get better, because you learn, and even athletes say you learn more from defeat than you do in victory.
Mm.
So treat it as such. It's like, this is a step along the way of the script. I thought maybe I had it right, but, and also don't necessarily throw yourself off a cliff based on one rejection.
Mm, yeah.
But likewise, don't ignore the rejection, but don't over give it too much emphasis, because it is just one voice. So maybe sound out some other voices to see, and don't, but also I find the other interesting thing too, is that when people have pinpointed something in a script that doesn't work, and I have a visceral reaction to it, or I'm like, oh, it's usually something that subconsciously I've known was weak and I didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah. And it's a, yeah,
and
exactly.
And you know how when you're having a fight with someone, like a significant other or something, you're very rarely fighting about the thing, or if they call you out, a lot of people's reactions when they get called out is to react aggressively in response rather than be
defensive. Yeah, you get defensive.
You get defensive and aggressive rather than be like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's a learning tool.
Well, as writers, we're required to be like the most vulnerable and the most thick-skinned at the same time.
Yeah.
So are actors and things like that. So it's just going to be a constant balance. We're going to talk a lot more about this, but let's move on.
Well, I want to move on to, so before we move out of this, we move on to the other thing, is the general media worries. The sense of that because disillusionment was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember at the beginning of the podcast?
Yeah. So, I don't listen. I just talk.
You got disillusioned halfway through and drifted off. So out there in the world right now is a lot. I mean, this could be its own podcast probably, but so let's just touch on it. But I like how we always say this could be a podcast and then neither one of us writes them down and then we forget. We need to re-listen to this.
Yeah.
So there is a feeling out there right now that writing for screenplays in Hollywood is a mess. And that people are all looking at one another and having meetings saying, well, this is a mess. What do we do? What's the future? Why am I bothering? Is there any hope for me that I can be a writer? Or should I just give the whole thing up and go and do accounting or retire and not worry about this? Or write for myself and not try to stick my head out of the bunker right now or out of the trench? How do you deal with that? My argument would be control what you can control.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to write and you want to get paid to write, excuse my language, but fuck the industry right now. I mean, sure, it's a mess. Sure, it's a train wreck. Sure, it's all over the place and it's gone through. And now we're having this battle with DEI. And I know for a long time, you know, anybody who was white was like, well, I can't get a job because Hollywood's obsessed with DEI now. And then before that, it was like, well, I can't get a job because Hollywood's obsessed with white people now. And there's always a reason you can sort of pinpoint in the media where things are crap and for someone in some way. And right now, we're going through a transition into, you know, what the streamers are doing, what network television is doing, what movies are doing in the movie theaters, that whole relationship, everything is sort of in a bit of flux. I certainly think this year's Oscar nominations show where we're at in terms of movies. I think this year is a bit of a mess. So... But I maintain optimism. We are, as human beings, we have always wanted to be entertained. We've always wanted to be told stories. We've always, since the beginning, I mean, I think I said this in an earlier podcast, they weren't painting on caves just for laughs. They were entertaining. They were sort of documenting their time, but they were also doing it in stylized ways. I mean, this has been from the beginning. So it's not going away. Our desire to be entertained is not going away. So... if the money from the studio is not coming, the money will come from somewhere else. The entertainment will pop up. It is irrepressible. So my advice would be to just keep working on your craft. Mm-hmm. You know, just be like, you know what, I'm just going to drown all that out at the moment. You know, I'll keep putting my head up because I want to get better, but I want to get better and I want to be able to write and I want to keep doing this and I can control that. And so, you know, the industry can sort itself out. I'll still be here.
Yeah, it's like anything, any news media. Control what you can control, engage, understand the industry, that will help you, but you don't need to fall down the rabbit hole.
No.
Because these, you know, these publications make money off of you clicking and reading and doom scrolling. All of them do. So it's no different in Hollywood. They're going to mostly talk about how bad things are. And it doesn't mean that there's not truth in those. And then also in terms of being disillusioned, I think we talked about this off mic before, which was Like, try to not become a hater.
Right.
And there's so much of that where you have screenwriters sitting there saying, well, oh man, yeah, they're only hiring, you know, this or that or whatever. And it's like, you're gonna, and then what that ends up doing when it falls into, sometimes for lately, the white dudes, it fell into outright racism where it's right. Like, well, that person only has a job because of this initiative or this or that. And it's like, anybody who gets a job in this industry has to have some level of talent. And if they don't, then they won't last that first job.
Right.
And it just is what it is. And there's all kinds of things that we can point to and say, well, here's the reason. And it's like, sure, they could all be accurate. If you were a writer anytime up to, I don't know, the 2000s, yes, if you weren't white, you probably were going to have a more difficult chance getting things made because most studios might make one movie by a minority, or they might have one person on staff who was a woman or a minority or whatever. And then you could say, the internet has made it so that there's people that are sending in things from all over. And so there's too much noise and there's too much competition or there's Netflix or this or that. And it's like, great. There's always going to be a reason. Yeah. And it's a difficult industry. And if you're looking for just some steady income, then like, you know, you might come out here and be successful in a week.
Unlikely.
Yeah. But
also sustaining it is just as hard almost as hard as breaking in.
Exactly.
I mean, the idea of what I used to think once I was in, it'd be gravy. It's not that. So no, I agree. And there's always a reason, but that's the same with going to the gym. Like you said, there's always a reason not to go to the gym.
Yep.
There's always a reason, you know, not to clean the backyard.
Yeah.
There's always a reason. You can always find reasons to not achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always say, oh, you know, it's going to rain in 2 weeks. Why am I going to bother washing the car now?
Well, that ties into process to me.
Yeah,
It's you stick to the process, then you know, you can have your moments, you can have your dark moments, you can have a friend that you can vent with, but
his name's Jim Beam.
get back to the process and just keep working if that's the thing you want to do.
Yes.
If you don't want to be a writer, then that's also okay.
Yeah. But you want to be a hobbyist.
Or you want to be a hobbyist. Yeah. Writing is one of the best hobbies anyone could ever have.
Yeah. But you roll Dahl in the shed. Yeah. Tell everybody to leave you alone. What was, you know, who knows what you're doing in there, but you're in your shed by yourself doing writing. Do that. That's great. Yeah.
We'll talk more about this
because
it feels, and it'll continue to evolve and
it
change.
Does.
I'm just going to tell you a very short movie, not really a moment, but it was the movie, it is the movie Phantom Thread by Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yes.
And when I...
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yes. First went to go see the movie when it came out in the theater, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Or 10.
Yeah. No, I think it was 2019.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I don't know. Maybe longer.
Our research here.
Yeah. I remember thinking it was fine. I remember thinking, okay, it's fine. And then I listened to a podcast. It might have even been with PTA. And he was talking about how, you know, The Master, another movie he made, he said it's so dramatic that he finds it hilarious. And sometimes he pushes things to be so dramatic that he, as the director and the performers, actually find it funny. But they don't cue that in the movie. And so it was this idea of go rewatch Phantom Thread as a comedy. And my wife and I went and rewatched it as a comedy. And it's like one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. And it feels very intentionally funny. I mean, his name is Reginald Woodcock. You know, he's very, very sassy and salty in that movie. It's hilarious. And so sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, how you're framing a movie. Mm. And I think someone like PTA has the ability to say, well, we're not marketing this as a comedy or drama. We're going to let the audience kind of figure it out because he's PTA and he can kind of play with that kind of genre mashing. But I was thankful that I heard that and I could come into it because now it's one of our favorite movies and we quote it as we would quote a comedy.
A comedy. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I gotta go watch it. Mm-hmm. Mine is not similar, but also not too different. Arachnophobia.
Oh.
That was my one attempt at self-therapy by movie. Because I was like, I'm not really big on spiders. I don't really like them. They kind of freak me out. So I'm going to sit through arachnophobia. Yeah, I know.
Spiders everywhere.
I know. And I don't care for them. So I'm going to sit through arachnophobia and that's going to cure me of my arachnophobia. Mm-hmm. It did not work. It did not work. It did not work at all. It was the most horrendous 90 minutes I've ever spent watching
a movie.
I made it, my hands over my eyes made it through most of the movie because I started watching, you know, proudly, I'm going to do this. I'm going to overcome my fear of spiders. And like 5 minutes in, I was like, please make this end.
Yeah.
This is just awful. So, yeah, that was my one. I tried movie as a form of therapy. No, don't recommend it.
Cool. Let's move on to a listener question. Have we talked about log lines? I don't know if we asked this question.
We've only done seven. This is like episode eight. You'd think we'd remember what we've done. Yeah, but let's do it.
It's not highlighted. So yeah, log lines, advice. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's various questions on it. So that's why I just will.
Yes, I'm going to gesticulate about this one. Log lines are awful to write. Mm-hmm. They are awful. I yet to find a writer. I know one person, Angela, who was co-founder of Write LA and is a working writer, and she's a guru on log lines. She used to actually charge money to help people with their log lines. Money well spent. My God, genius. She has a little worksheet. You could probably email me and I'll probably email it to you. But she had this great worksheet about what log lines should do. What I will say is they need to be short. They are hard. Acknowledge that. You don't have to give everything away. But it's the point that really bothers me about a lot of log lines that I read, if I'm reading a script, is how often the log line doesn't match the script.
Mm-hmm.
And so the writer in the log line is obviously telling you what they want their movie to be about. And then then you read the script and it's like, well, you didn't touch this, or you didn't go near enough into this, or you didn't get there until page 50. What are you doing? So log lines, I would encourage you to write a log line early, because in a way that sort of is your subconscious laying out what you want this movie to be about. And then you have something to check in as you're writing your script. Well, am I sticking to the log line? Is there a piece of that in here, or am I like way off track?
Yeah.
So, but as for actually writing it, yeah, I would go online and look at tips. They're hard. Please acknowledge that they're hard. Shorter, enticing. I don't think you have to give away the ending, but you can. It's not a big deal. People aren't going to kill you. It's like, oh my God, you gave away the ending. I can't believe it. Don't make it too teasy. You know, like, what happens when two people get stuck on an island? It's like, well, okay. I need a little bit more, maybe, you know? Yeah.
Well, I think sometimes there's like log line gurus, and I'm assuming Angela is better than this, because she is much better than this. So a lot of them will say, no, it has to have all these elements. And then I'll read log lines oftentimes where they're like word soup, where it's like, okay, you have to say this character and what they want, and then an active, you know, verb, and then this character, and then it leads to this lesson that they learn, but also make it exciting. So add some really fun adjectives in there,
and exactly 29 words.
Yeah, and then you read it, and I have to read it 5 times and say what. I also think there's value to different log lines. I think if you are submitting a sheet that has a log line, and then immediately below it a synopsis, and then below it a larger synopsis or character break. Down, I think that opening log line can contain less, can just say, well, I'm just getting you to the next line here, because I have more space, versus something where you're being judged purely on your log line.
Yeah. Although I will say, I think the log line is handy, because you're going to use it in an elevator as well.
I'm saying you can have multiple versions of a log line for different.
But you want a good one, because it's going to be handy when people say, "So what's your film about?" Yeah. And you're like, "Oh, there's this guy."
You're 100% right. If you're having trouble even, I mean, they're hard in general, but if you have a movie that has a very clear, you know, through line, then it will be a little bit, be a little easier to say, well, I know it's this, and then you can kind of figure out.
And the choice of words then becomes handy too, because you can actually figure out what words evoke a response from a person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's handy. It's handy probably to try a log line speaking it to someone.
I was just going to say that. Say it out loud. Even when you're just coming up with an idea, think of the log line, think of the idea, say it out loud to people, talk, you know, say, I'm thinking of this, I'm coming up with this idea about this movie. And then you can tell 10 words in, not even doing a log line, just saying, oh yeah, it's about, you know, the Titanic. And if people start to kind of like look away, you know, okay, like I'm getting a sense that I'm not telling the story.
They're hanging, waiting for the story to start.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about this guy, and he was a guy who used to work in the fashion industry, and then he went through a hard time, and you see the people like, and when's the movie start? What's the movie?
Yeah.
And so, absolutely say them out loud, and that helps, that inform. But that inform, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Because people who are too afraid to share, that's another podcast.
But that's the same thing. So I think treat your log line like your synopsis, like your script. It's something you workshop. It's something you can send to friends. It's something you can send to Tim while doing, you know, getting feedback and give some advice. And you know, you'll actually have read the script. And so you can say whatever. I mean, I don't know what you're offering there, but there's, you know, don't we see it so often where people put it off for the last thing and they go, I got to write a long line.
I do that.
No, and it's fine. I mean, sometimes it's, I need a title as well. And then there's a whole conversation about titles.
But I'm writing a rom-com right now. It has no log line, no title.
Yeah.
Aussie trivia, quickly. Let's movie shot in Australia, part one. I'm just going to go through some movies that have been shot in Australia that you may not know. Now, we all know that The Matrix was shot in Australia, don't we?
Okay.
Do we know that?
I didn't know that.
It was all shot in Australia.
Wow.
Matrix, Thor, Aquaman, and one of the Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Mm.
All filmed in my homeland. But The Matrix was the first sort of biggie. And then the following two. So, yeah, it's all Sydney. It's downtown Sydney when Neo is wandering around. It's Sydney. Oh, wow. So there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's it. We're out of time. Thank you. Whoa, I dropped my glasses, which means my goodbye is going to be very, very brief. Scriptmate is brought to you by Write LA, a screenwriting community. That is us. Visit our website to get more tips, helpful information, read articles, watch videos, including with Jason Alexander talking about Seinfeld, and learn about all the ways we help improve your command of craft and prepare for a professional writing career. Go to write-la.com, write-la.com for all the details. Our theme music was written and performed by the Australian band The Swarm. Big thanks to them. And our beautiful graphic was designed by my talented daughter, Claire Schilberger. Thank you for listening. We are grateful. If you have a question, email me or Tony. He'll read it as well. Tim@write-la.com. Tim@write-la.com. We'll be back soon. But for now, say goodbye, Tony.
Goodbye.